We looked at the first statement that Jesus made on the cross last week, and that was, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And we discussed that and the Roman soldier's role and what he had gone through and his predictions. Remember, he had predicted many times about what was going to happen. And so I think we are ready for the second statement, which is found in Luke 23, verse 43. So let's go back to verse 40. Luke 23, verse 40. This Jesus is, of course, hanging on the cross between the two criminals, the two robbers or thieves. And in verse 40, remember, one of the criminals in verse 39 blasphemed Jesus, saying, if you're the Christ, save yourself and us. But the other, verse 40, answering, rebuked him, saying, do you not even fear God, seeing you are under the same condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we receive the due reward of our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong. The one criminal realized that they were being executed because they had done something wrong. So he knew that he deserved to be on the cross. He knew he deserved to be killed there on the cross. And he knew the other one deserved it too. Obviously, he knew the other one and what the other one had done. So he was familiar with whatever it was they had done. But he says, you know, we're getting justice. You know, the two criminals are being treated fairly. But he said, this man has done nothing wrong. So he had obviously seen at least some of what had gone on. And he knew that this guy did not deserve to be on a cross, did not deserve to be crucified, because he hadn't done what they had done. You know, he freely admitted that what he had done was wrong. He deserved punishment, but Jesus didn't. So Jesus didn't deserve punishment in any way. And so he told Jesus, verse 42, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And he may not have understood a lot about the kingdom, but he did understand that Jesus was having a kingdom, was getting a kingdom, yes.
And possibly, he might have heard Jesus speak at some point.
He might, absolutely.
Because, you know, he's talking about Jesus fed the 5,000 people.
Yeah.
And what was there, 120 in the upper room?
At one time, there was 120 disciples.
You know, there were probably a lot of people. Might have heard a sermon or seen a healing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely. We, you know, we just, one of those things we don't have any idea about. He might have heard Jesus on more than one occasion or talked to someone who had. He may have heard Jesus. We just, there's no way of knowing. Or he may have talked to someone that knew Jesus. I mean, there, you know, we're given what we're given, and that's it. So we don't know why this robber believed that Jesus was a king, because to have a kingdom, you have to be the king. So he did, to some degree, believe that Jesus had a kingdom, because he asked Jesus personally, remember me when you do come into your kingdom. So he did, you know, did want that. I mean, he did want to be remembered. And he calls it, Jesus says, well, assuredly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise. Today you'll be with me in paradise. And paradise is that, basically a Persian word that means a pleasure garden, a wonderful place of peace and rest and comfort. And that was the word chosen by the Holy Spirit to describe where Jesus was going and where this robber was going, this criminal was going. They were both going to this place called paradise. And let's go to Acts chapter 2, and we'll see something that's associated with it. This, of course, is Peter's sermon on the day of Pentecost. And in verse 25, Peter is talking about who Jesus was and the background of Jesus. And in verse 25, he quotes David, who is talking about Jesus. And David says, verse 25 of Acts 2, I foresaw the Lord always before my face, for he is my right hand, at my right hand, that I may not be shaken. Therefore my heart rejoiced and my tongue was glad. Moreover, my flesh also will rest in hope. For you will not leave my soul in Hades, nor will you allow your Holy One to see corruption. Jesus was, of course, going to the Hadean world, which, as we've seen in a number of places, had two parts or two compartments or two places. A place where sometimes we call it paradise, sometimes we call it Abraham's bosom. Again, a place of comfort and rest and pleasure and so forth. Whereas, remember, the rich man lifted up his eyes in torment. So there were two parts of this Hadean world. One for those who had not lived according to God's will, and one for those who had. So it says that you will be with me today in paradise. Now, remember, the Bible is very specific, and we'll get to that later, that Jesus did not go to heaven when he died. His spirit didn't. I mean, the Bible is very clear about that, and like I said, we'll get to that one of these days. But he did not go to heaven. The Bible is clear about that. So he went, as he told the thief here, today you'll be with me in paradise. He says, that's where you're going to be. So he was making a promise to this thief. He says, I'm promising you that this very day. So Jesus knew, and not everyone that died or everyone that was crucified died the first day. Sometimes they would linger for days. But Jesus said, today you and me both will be in paradise. So Jesus, of course, knew what was going to happen. And he told the thief, the robber, that was going to happen. And, of course, this has nothing to do with us today. You know, Jesus isn't walking with us today. He has already been crucified. He's already been raised from the dead. There aren't, you know, he doesn't come to the world and he's, we can't talk with him and tell us that we're going to be with him in paradise. Though that was before the cross. Remember, the Hebrew writer tells us that it takes the death of the testator before the testament comes into place. So before the New Testament was to take power, be the authority for us, Jesus had to die. And so here he's telling the thief that, and the thief obviously believed that Jesus was the king. Because he says, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And so Jesus says and promises, well, today you're going to be with me in paradise. So that was before the new covenant ever took place. And so to go to the thief on the cross is to completely misunderstand what the new covenant is and when it took place. Now, the third statement Jesus makes is in John. And we'll have to kind of go, you know, back and forth between these, because sometimes Matthew has it and sometimes Luke and sometimes John. John 19, and this begins in verse 25. This is the third recorded statement. Jesus might have made a bunch of other statements, but these are the ones we have recorded. The soldiers had cast lots for his clothes in fulfillment of prophecy. Verse 25 of John 19 says, now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing by, he said to his mother, woman, behold your son. Then he said to the disciple, behold your mother. And from that hour that disciple took her to his own home. We talked a little bit about this when we, a week or two ago, about the fact that Jesus' brothers were not believers even when he died on the cross. It wasn't until after that they became believers. I guess this was dealing with the introduction of the book of James, because James was the Lord's brother as well as Jude. So two of Jesus' brothers who did not believe during his whole life, even up to the point where he was crucified, became believers later. And so Jesus here, none of his family are believers, and so he's there on the cross and sees his mother, and so he doesn't ask his brothers or his sisters to take care of the mother. None of them were believers. Not a one of them. So who does he ask? Well, the one disciple whom he loved, John, the Apostle John. Because John is standing there by her. And it's interesting, you know, the brothers apparently aren't there. Neither are the sisters. Because if they were, they would have been standing by their mother. They weren't even there. The one that is there is John. So John is there, and Jesus asked him to take care of his mother. And it says that's exactly what he did. We do find out that James and Jude do become believers. Remember, James becomes a pillar in the church at Jerusalem later on. So they did become believers later. But it wasn't until Jesus was crucified and after he was resurrected before they became believers. So Jesus here in this statement is asking John to take care of his mother. Then the next statements, there are four statements, and they seem to take place just like one right after another. Just kind of boom, 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 just like that. And they're found, the four statements are in all four accounts, or parts of them are. So the next one is in Matthew 27, verse 45. So this is right before Jesus' death. So he makes four statements, like I said, pretty much right in succession, right before he dies. We won't get them all looked at today, but we will get started. So Matthew 27, verse 45. Now from the sixth hour until the ninth hour, there was darkness over all the land. The sixth hour, and this was Roman time apparently, was noon. The ninth hour was 3 p.m., so during that time, from noon to 3 p.m., which would be the brightest part of the day, normally, there was what? There was darkness over the whole land. You do wonder what all the other people were thinking about, because they knew, you know, this was the brightest part of the day. It's not supposed to be dark. And, you know, at this time of the year, during Passover, was when Jerusalem was filled with people, just running over with people. And then apparently all of a sudden, it becomes dark. And it wasn't just dark for a minute or two or 5 minutes, it was dark for 3 straight hours. I think if I was living there, I would be thinking, something's happening. You know, this is not normal. Something must be happening. So it's that way for 3 hours. Obviously, supernatural. I mean, this was a miracle. This doesn't just happen. Okay? Eclipses don't last for 3 hours. Okay? They're very, very momentary. Wasn't an eclipse. This was something that God caused. And so it says, and about the ninth hour, so at the end of that period, okay, it's almost 3 p.m, Jesus cried out with a loud voice. It's amazing he even still had any energy, considering everything he's gone through. And he quotes, or he says, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, that is, my God, why have you forsaken me? Now remember, it's dark outside. Apparently, it's just pitch black, practically. This is from Psalm 22. Let's go back and read that. Psalm 22, verse 1, which says, this psalm is about the Messiah. The whole psalm is about the Christ, the Anointed One. And it starts out, my God, why have you forsaken me? So that's a direct quote from Psalm 22:1. Why are you so far from helping me and from the words of my groaning? And you can read, you know, we don't have time to read the whole psalm, but that psalm is about Jesus and especially about his suffering. So that's the first thing. And he is, you know, he's certainly feeling the idea of being cut off from the presence of the Father. I mean, that remember, he is a person and understands that. Let's read, and we're about out of time. Let's read just a couple of places and we'll stop there. Galatians 3:13, first of all, says this. Galatians 3:13, Christ has redeemed us from the curse of the law, having become a curse for us. For it's written, cursed is everyone who hangs on a tree. And of course, that goes back to the law of Moses. So certainly Jesus is feeling that. Because he's become a curse for us. He didn't deserve to be a curse, but he became a curse for us. And then 2 Corinthians 5:21, and we'll stop there, says this, for he, talking about God, made him, Christ, who knew no sin, to be sin for us, that we might become the righteousness of God in him. So Jesus came to understand, or came to know and to suffer sin, even though he had never done the slightest thing wrong. He had never committed any type of sin at all. And so he had to experience the weight, the guilt, the shame of all of that on the cross of all the people. And think about, you know, how the guilt that you and I feel, the shame we feel over a single sin. And then you just multiply that to the nth degree. And you see what Jesus is feeling on the cross. And it would have been brutal, just that aspect alone, him knowing sin for us. Well, our time is up. We will, Lord willing, kind of start there next week. Yes.